Joining us is one of our favorite guests, Dr. Bill Schecht. He's the doctor of comedy. Hello, Mr. Schecht.
Well, it's doctor.
Dr. Schecht, sorry. Yeah. Yes.
I think that we can just tell the people because we want to be accurate.
Yes.
That it's 2 p.m. As we're talking, which means it's before 5, which means you shouldn't be snotty yet. Don't be snotty till after 5. So,
hey, first off,
out of the chute, we're doing that. But again, you know, what a break for you that I was available. I think it was 1998, and I'm working on the ESPYs, and Hugh Fink, who I know you know, he's with Saturday Night Live, and he's producing the show, and Lorne is in charge, and this is when the show was still in New York, and Hugh says to Lorne, we're thinking of asking Paul Schaefer to be a presenter. And Lorne said, well, I'm sure Paul is available. And I mean, it took, and I'm doing a quicker version of how long it took him to say available. and yet still, somehow, I now am more available than him. So I don't have anything to do, and I know you don't. So why don't I have a feeling? I have a feeling that we have one thing in common, which is that we are better podcast guests than we are hosts.
Yes.
So with that in mind, why don't I host the show?
Thank God.
And then that way you can show the world how, I guess, adroit a guest you are. So the first thing is, I was doing some research before I decided that I was going to host the show. So I was doing some research in preparation for hijacking the show, and I noticed that you are a giant fan of Turner Classic Movies.
Yes, I am.
I'll tell you. Is it always on? Is it the soundtrack in your apartment, Turner Classic Movies?
To my life, yes. The sound, yes.
Yeah. And is there, if I asked you, is there a movie, if we all have several movies like this, but if I say, if there's a movie on and you say, you see that it's on, you go, I'm going to watch 5 minutes of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 2 hours later. What would be the first film that would come to mind like that? For me, there's several.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily my absolutely favorite movies. But if something like Wall Street is on, I would just watch 5 minutes of this just to see where they are. And then it's 2 hours later.
Right.
So what would one of those movies be for you?
Goodfellas, Casino, Wall
right.
Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. JFK.
Oh, JFK.
Yeah. Life for
wow. Some,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And, Adrian, my late wife, Adrian Tolles, used to say that when she went to Dallas, they had a thing in Dealey Plaza. They had a cutout of a convertible that you could like put your head through and you know and be in the Zapruder film like
yeah.
you were on you know right in the I have one story about Turner Classic Movies which involves my boss, my former boss Dave Letterman.
But before you get there, as a guest yeah. of this show. Can
yeah.
I ask you a question about the Kennedy assassination?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Where were you?
I know exactly where I was. I was at the Park School, and I was in, so it's 63, so I was in first grade,
mm-hmm.
And we went home. So it happened at 1 o'clock in Dallas. So it would be 2 o'clock, and so I was on the way home from school when it happened, and I got home, and this is when my parents were kind of well off, so you know it's bad when your housekeeper's crying. So remember my housekeeper crying, and I went running to the television, and you know, couldn't really understand it. It was one of, I will say that growing up, it was one of two times that I saw my father cry, both in 1963. That was the second time, November of 1963. The first time was,
let me guess,
six months earlier.
Let me guess.
March of 1963, when Bob Cousy retired. So, but, and yet, in all these years, nobody has come up to me and said, do you remember exactly where you were when Bob Cousy retired? So that's all I can tell you.
All right, one more question.
Go ahead.
Okay. Who was a bigger ladies' man? Cousy or Kuzman? Jerry Kuzman. Bob Cousy or Jerry Kuzman?
Well, I got to say, it was probably Jerry Kuzman, A, because he was a lefty, which is, you know, it's a big advantage, and B, he didn't have a speech impediment. So that's going to be, that's really going to help you out.
And last question.
Yes.
And then you can have the show back.
Right, have the show back.
And you can talk about your former boss. Boston. The Boston, yeah, Red Sox.
Correct.
Were the last Major League Baseball team to integrate.
Correct.
As I remember the Bruins, not the Celtics,
Right.
Except for that thing on his arm. Who was the center for the Celtics who had that thing on his
Bill
arm?
Bill Russell?
Well, no. There was another guy who had, he was white, but he had like Gorbachev's port wine stain on his arm.
No, you know who had Gorbachev's port wine stain on his arm was a forward named Jack Marin, who played for the Bullets. He was a lovely player, but he had a horrific birthmark on his shoulder. But I don't know who you're talking about. You know who the first center for the Celtics was Chuck Connors, the Rifleman.
Really?
Who played pro basketball and pro baseball, played for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
And did porn, and he also did porn.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
Wow. Talk about
triple gift threat.
Yeah, really. But can we just go back to the Kennedy set for just one?
Yes, go ahead.
They did this. Did you watch the CNN series on the Kennedys? It was 6-part.
Yes.
Really well done. And again, something like, oh, you think you know, and there's a lot of stuff that you didn't know. And they didn't linger on the assassination too long. But I am now I've come completely around in the last 20-some years from being one of those guys that was absolutely sure it was a conspiracy and the government, and I've come around to the thinking that it was so horrific that people just couldn't believe it was one guy. How could it be one crazy, you know, guy? And so that it wasn't so much an anti-government pro-conspiracy. It was that just to assuage what was so horrible. It just couldn't. It had to be some of this giant master plan.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that?
Well, I agree with you. I've come around over the past 25 years. Now I'm against it. I thought, you know what?
You're against the assassination.
Yes, I am.
Well, good.
Emphatically.
A lot of people wouldn't have taken that stand.
Yes. I still believe it was a conspiracy. I think through the mists of time, we like to forgive. And that's the danger. I think it was a massive conspiracy. And if they weren't going to get him that day, they were going to get him the next.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I'm, and I've always been one of these guys that, you know, whatever you can blame on the government, just go ahead. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, go ahead and keep going, because that makes me happy, because I think that there, you know, look, there is no truth in victimization, but it still feels pretty good. And you know who said there is no truth in victimization? A man named U.S. Anderson, who wrote a book called Three Magic Words, and for the life of me, I can't tell you what the three magic words are. But,
well, hang on. I haven't been paying attention to what you've been saying. Are you saying that Chuck Connors was the rifleman at Dealey Plaza? Is that what you just said?
Wow. Look at how we've tied this up. Look, it's been great having you on the show.
Okay, go back
but
to...
But Dick Gaudier is waiting to come on. And
yes. A great cartoonist, by the way.
What?
Dick Gaudier was a great cartoonist.
No.
Yeah.
The actor Dick Gaudier?
Yes, Jaime.
Who played Birdie on Broadway?
Jaime.
Played Jaime in Get Smart.
I don't know about that. I'm just calling you a Jaime.
See how much better you are as a guest? Look at what these people have been missing out on. See, I think it's... not crazy about admitting this. I think you are talented.
Ooh.
But I think it's the weight of the production on you that wears you down, and the obligation to the structure.
Yes.
That just, you know, and now you're unchained.
Uh-huh.
And here we go.
We should do this. This should be like, I'm on vacation and you should host the show. This is a great idea. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a guest. Yeah. Okay. This is great.
So are we ready to go back to Turner Classic Movies?
Yes, sir.
So, this is, I don't know. It's a few years ago when I come, we used to have a monologue meeting every day at 2 o'clock, where we would run through the jokes and cut it down to get the monologue we wanted for the show. And so I walk in one day, and Dave Letterman, he's got a little bit of a face on, and I say, "What's the matter?" And he's angry. He says to me, "Turner Classic Movies is running a Spencer Tracy marathon tonight," and I go, "Well, that's great, because you love Spencer Tracy." And he says, "Yeah, but why can't it be tomorrow night when we do two shows and I get home late and I can't get to sleep and then I can watch it all night?"
Mm.
To which I say, "Gee, if only there was some sort of machine that could capture the images on your television at an earlier time, I think it would look like a big eye." And it would. And he looked at me like, "You know, you asshole, you know it doesn't count unless you see it in real time. You know it doesn't count. Television does not count." And that's my...
Is that true? I mean, do you think that? It's not like a sporting event. It's a movie.
Yeah, I think that. I don't have a whatever the thing is, the TiVo thing or whatever they call it. I don't do that. I don't tape anything. You know, I was a guy when VCRs first came out. I used to tape the Met game. I would do that. But I don't. You know, if I miss it, I miss it. You know, there's on. Yeah, but I. I like the notion of watching stuff in real time, even though none of it is really, other than sporting events, in real time. But, you know, that just the comfort of how we were raised on television is that you turn it on, oh, this is on now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one show that I watch when it's first broadcast right now, and that's the show Billions, because I know the guy that created it. I think it's an interesting show. I watch that, you know, even though there are many subsequent rebroadcasts of that. I also, God help me, have you seen this show, I'm Dying Up Here Now, which is a show about, it's sort of based on the Comedy Store in the 70s. It's about...
Oh, I thought it was about the guys who climbed Mount Everest.
Well, that too, which is why it's a unique show. Hey, who's from out of town? It's unbelievable. They get to the summit. That's the... Anybody celebrating anything? It's a bizarre thing. You know, you could have picked anything. And
yes, my friend Rick Overton is in I'm Dying Up Here.
Rick Overton is in. They have a lot of comics in the show. Unfortunately, none of them are playing comics. They've got one guy who's a comic playing a comic, and he's the only guy that is behaving like a comic. And the guy, his name's Al Madrigal. He's mm-hmm. a legit comic, and he plays this Mexican comic, and he's great. And the other guys are, you know, they're actors trying to be comics. And, it's one of those things where I keep watching it. God help me, but they don't have it down. Overton is great. Overton, one night I was at the Improv in L.A. and you know I used to hate going to L.A. and Adrian and I, we used to stay at the Airport Hyatt just to watch the planes take off to New York because we just hated being out there. And I was at the Improv, this is a million years ago, and Overton comes up to me, and you know, hi Rick, hi Bill. I didn't really have any kind of relation. And he was also an improv act in New York, and I was at Catch. And, you know, just hi. We didn't know each other. And he comes up to me one night at the bar at the Improv. And obviously, I've never forgotten this. And he says, Gregory Peck doing improv. And then he just said, I need an occupation. And that was it. And then he walked away. And it was so great, because that's all I want. I'd like my own little show, you know, just something that you think that, boy, I just love that. But he's great. He's very good. Dom Herrera is on the show.
By the way,
Andy Kindler is on the show now this year.
Did you know that Gregory Peck was Jewish?
No, he was... No, come on.
Yeah.
Honest to God. Really?
Mort Saul told me that Gregory Peck is Jewish. And I hear Andy Kindler's Jewish, too. But, yeah.
I hear Andy Kindler. Let me tell you my favorite Andy Kindler line, which I bring up to him whenever I have the chance. He comes on, and Dave was very fond of him. Dave had him do remotes for us for years. And... which is funny because Andy, in terms of what he did, what he does as his act, is usually not the type of guy that Dave would like because it's a little too inside show business and a little too. But he just loved Andy's manner. So Andy comes out to introduce a remote, and he years ago, and he says to, and this is going to dovetail nicely into what we've previously talked about. And he comes out and he says to Dave, did you know that they renamed the Triborough Bridge the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge? And Dave says, yeah. And he says, well, the Triborough family is furious. I mean.
Yeah, that's great.
And then talked about how he was working with them. That he was working with the Triborough family.
I love that.
Yeah, so that's...
Did you see the Bobby Kennedy documentary on Netflix?
No, I didn't.
Very interesting.
Was that anything?
Yeah. Where were you?
I do not have Netflix. But you know what I did? I got the free month. Just because somebody told me about Fred Armisen's Stand Up for Drummers. So, of course, mm-hmm. I got to get the free month and see that. And There and were that, some.
You would love that because, as you've mentioned on the show before, you're both a drummer and an Armisen.
Right. Yeah, well, let me just tell you something. Armisen, I'm a guy that plays the drums. Armisen's a drummer. I mean, he is a legit. I mean, he has got some major chops. And that was fun. And then I went from there to another guy that I love, and not enough people share my love for, Todd Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw his latest. Mm-hmm. What is it, though, now, and maybe you can help me out with this, what is it now with the comics and the specials and the music stand? What is that with the notes, with the material in the music stand and reading off the music stand?
I love that.
What is that? Stop doing that.
Oh, I couldn't do stand-up if it weren't for a music stand.
I understand that, but we're not talking about you, thank God. But I'm telling you, you know, this is not, you know, your parents' living room and a recital. This is like you got a decent bit of money to put your hour together. You know the material or be subtle about it. Put put the pages on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and walk on the pages. But these guys are, look, I'm not thrilled when the guys in my band bring the music stands. But, you know, it's music. But,
yeah, I agree with you. But
now, the kid that everybody loves, who I think is very strong, John Mulaney,
mm-hmm.
no music stand.
No. No, he has everybody in the audience wear Post-its on their foreheads.
Oh, okay. So now, so he's like Brando. Okay, I get it. I get it now. I get it now.
Yeah. His special was Kid Gorgeous.
I used to, every once in a while, I don't know why I would do this with Dave, you know, when it was, you know, there was a lull, and there were a lot of lulls. I would say I would all of a sudden do the only bit of Marlon Brando that I could do, which I would say, you know what I say? I say, ha, ha, ha. And every time Dave would say, you know, it's like he's here. And which brings us back to Turner Classic Movies.
Yes, sir.
And I like the stuff that I like on Turner Classic Movies. And I love when they show the movies that I love, and I know for a fact that I am the only one in America watching this movie when it's on. And the movie I'm talking about is one of my favorites, Palm Springs Weekend. Are you familiar with Palm Springs Weekend?
Troy Donahue?
Troy, very good. Troy Donahue.
Natalie
Robert
Wood's
Conrad,
husband? Oh, Robert Conrad. A young Robert Conrad. That's right.
A young Robert Conrad. A young Connie Stevens.
Yeah, Jewish.
Barry Van Dyke.
Not Jewish.
Yeah. Not Jewish, yeah.
But Connie Stevens was Jewish.
Is that right? No, she became, what, she became Jewish?
Born Jewish.
Really?
Connie
wow.
Stevens, yep.
Shocking. That is shocking. Did you know that Eddie Van Halen had a brother who also played the guitar, who wasn't nearly as good as him, Jerry Van Halen. A lot of people don't. So, but this
so
movie,
Palm Spring Weekend. They're
Palm Springs Weekend.
Yeah.
First of
I've
all,
I've seen that.
Well, you've seen it. And if you've seen it, you've seen it 39 less times than I have. Troy Donahue sings the theme. Go to the YouTube machine and punch that up, because that is really something.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Conrad, who plays a bad guy, who plays a spoiled rich kid, has a line in that movie that is so strong, where he's trying to put the moves on Connie Stevens, who is pretending she's 18, she's 15, and he talks to her that his father is very rich and his father's been married 4 times, and then slips in the next line is, oh, you should come out to the house Mother's Day for the rally, which is a phenomenal line about a multi-married guy. I just,
you know. I see. The rally would because, be the family, the extended family.
Right, because there's so many, you see.
Right.
And for the rally.
I see, yeah.
So, there are, Billy Mummy is in it.
Plays from Lost in Space.
Right. Lost in Space and The Twilight Zone. And plays an evil child. And Ty Harden, who played John F. Kennedy in PT-109. John F. Kennedy's buddy.
Cliff Robertson.
That's right. Ty Harden played his... the second in command of the PT boat. That's right. So, but we're back to Jack Kennedy.
He played Captain
Bean. See how I weave this? See, you don't do enough weaving. You know, you do. You do. You spew. You don't weave.
I'm like a spider who spews the silk, but doesn't know how to weave it. Yeah, that's where a good comedy
team. That is a rare. That's a rare spider when they spew the silk. So, do we want to move on to? Anything else to say about?
I want to mention something about. As long as we're talking about Cliff Robertson.
Yeah.
Do you know his wife's claim to fame?
No.
She grew up in Mar-a-Lago.
Is that right?
Dina Merrill. Was married to Cliff Robertson.
I didn't, yeah.
And she was the heiress, not to Merrill Lynch, but Meriwether Post. I think she was the heiress to some cereal magnate.
I think you're right. I think you're right. But who did she moved on from Cliff Robertson?
David Beagleman. David Beagleman.
Now we're having a conversation. Yes, that's right.
Do you know who David Beagleman was?
David Beagleman was the head of a studio, correct? And he got caught up in something, shot himself, right?
Well, yes. Hang on.
Something like that.
Yes.
I'm doing a very, because we really don't have much time.
And who cleaned up the...
We have to cut to the sponsors.
David Beagleman stole all of Judy Garland's money, along with Sid Luft.
Correct.
And then he became the head of Columbia Pictures.
Correct. Okay, right.
And then he forged a check using Cliff Robertson's name.
Okay.
And Cliff Robertson reported him to the FBI, and David Beagleman said, I'm check kiting. I'm a studio executive. What's wrong with you? This is what we do. And then he went to prison, and then when he got out, he blew his brains out in the hotel across the street from CAA's headquarters.
Right.
This is the trivia.
And And that was the first pitch meeting.
Does it have to be a bullet through the head?
Right. Yeah.
But here's my trivia question.
Yeah.
David Beagleman blew his brains out in the hotel across the street from CAA. There was a very famous actress who came claim the body. Who was it?
I can't. You're going to tell me, and I'm going to go, oh. But I didn't know he blew his brains out after he got out of the joint. You know, usually that's a guy with some time on his hands. But who is the you're going to tell me, and I'm going to be upset when I hear it, because I'm not going to remember this. Who is it?
Suzanne Pleshette.
Oh, right. Great.
Just, you know.
Great.
Okay.
Well done. Well done.
By the way,
I don't know why you reminded me of this, but
by the way, you leave a tip if your friend blows their brains out in the hotel room. You tip housekeeping. You leave a little something extra.
Yeah, you leave a little. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't even think people need to be told that. But I think that's implied. Does it have to be a bullet through the head? Wow. I don't know why this reminded me of that, but I'm going to say it anyway.
By the way, we're back to Jack Kennedy.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
I'm weaving. I'm weaving.
Yeah, you are weaving. You are weaving. And I'm going to take a little bit of a side turn and say, because we were talking about baseball, we were talking about the Mets, Rusty Staub.
Great chef. Great Canadian chef.
Great. But he passed away.
Yes.
And I got a call. I got a text 5 minutes after he passed away from a mutual friend of ours, and we're going to leave his name out of it, who texted me, I don't want to say Rusty was a bottom, but they're burying him face down. 5 minutes after the man passes away. You know,
wait a
Jews,
second.
We wait 24 minutes.
Wait a second. Wait a second. I remember Rusty Staub. He played for the Mets.
Correct.
And he was a chef.
Yes, and he had two restaurants, both bad, but he was a chef, yeah.
And are you saying that he was something more than just a chef?
Yes, yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, it was, well, you know, as Larry David said to me, you know, the cooking pretty much gave it away. But,
well, now, was he a pitcher or a catcher?
Yeah, right, correct.
Both, okay.
But
I didn't know that. I didn't know they had.
We're back to Mets and the baseball. And are we going to move? We were going to. I wanted to talk about.
Hang on, I didn't know. Was he part of the '69 Mets?
No, he was not. He was. He was part of the '73 Mets.
Oh,
which is a whole, which involves a couple other people, and.
I had no idea.
It's 60 plus four other people. Yeah. Just believe what it is.
I had no idea that he was.
Well, you know.
Wow.
Well, apparently you didn't get the sporting news.
What position did he play? Sir, I'm not making a joke. Was he like a? Wasn't he?
He was an outfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Played a little bit of first base, but he came up as an outfielder.
Wow.
And with the Astros, he came up as he was.
What?
With the Astros, yes, that's right. With the Colt 45s. He was a teenager when he made the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
He played for the. He was. He went in the expansion draft to the Montreal Expos. Then he was traded to the Mets. And then he played with the Tigers, the Rangers. Back to the Expos and back to the Mets. Finished with the Mets and retired the year before. Retired after the 85 season before they won it all in 86.
Hmm.
And
wow. And you know who Tug McGraw's son is?
Yes, I do. Is Tim McGraw? Yeah. And Tug McGraw, who invented the expression in 1973, you got to believe.
Which
and
Al
when
Michaels,
he died,
Al Michaels
the same guy that texted the bottom joke texted me, you got to bereave, 5 minutes after Tug McGraw died.
Wait a second. Tug McGraw was gay, too?
No. No, because, I mean, with a nickname like Tug, he really couldn't have been. Yeah.
Well, he when Tug McGraw died, he was... He really was a closer.
Yes. That's lovely. See, that's weaving. There's some
weaving. I'm weaving. I remember Tug.
Yeah, he was a wonderful... And he was with two championship teams. He was with the 69 Mets, who won it all, and he was with the 1980 Phillies, who won it all.
And
he was the closer on that team.
And speaking
was
of...
not the closer on the 69 Mets, by the way.
Really?
No, he was one of the guys in the bullpen, but they used – it was not really the same back then. You didn't have a dedicated – they had Don Cardwell was one of the guys that closed games. And I'm trying – now I can't even think of I can't even think of the other guy that they like to use at the end of a game. But, you know, he might be used once. So then that happened.
Yeah, Tug McGraw also had a comic strip.
No.
Yes, he did. Speaking
really?
Of Dick Gaudier, see, I know my cartoonists, and there was.
I can't believe that Dick Gaudier was a cartoonist.
I was studying animation, and Dick Gaudier wrote a book on how to draw.
Wow.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I. I thought he was so great as Jaime, and he was. And he played. Oh, you know what? He played Robin Hood in the. I think Mel Brooks did the Robin Hood series
right
on in the early '80s. And what the hell was it called? It wasn't Men in Tights. It was that was the movie. When Things Were Rotten was the name of the show, and Dick Gaudier played Robin Hood.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Never had a dinner. But, can we move on
to
a guy we both know who was kind of in the news briefly, Dennis Miller.
Yes.
He, Michelle Wolf performed at the Correspondents' Dinner. Let's get your take on that, and then we'll move on briefly to Dennis Miller. After there was this uproar over Michelle Wolf's 20 minutes, he went on Twitter and he said, you know, what a disgusting human being, and I'm going to write some nasty jokes about her, and I'll have them Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was Friday. You know, so it was like he needed about 5 days to come up with, and then sure enough, Wednesday rolled around, and he contritely came back on Twitter and says, "Well, I've said some mean things about people in my time, so let's, you know, I don't think I'm helping the dialogue any."
Mm-hmm.
But of course, he took a beating from Twitter about it's going to take you this long, or you haven't said, you know, so just framing it all for our listener.
Mm-hmm.
And but let's.
And by the way, thank
but first,
you.
Yeah, first, your feeling about Michelle Wolf and the job she did, and then second, we'll talk a little about Dennis and when we feel this transition happened with him.
Well, I think, you know, Michelle did a great job, and I can't believe she's only 32. And it's just stunning, the courage that she has. Then again, because I'm a progressive, I couldn't possibly have any criticism, because then I would be...
Right, then you would be part of the problem.
Yes. So I'm not going to bring up the fact that she said the F word, because I think, you know, I'm on her side, and I hate Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and
right.
However, had she not said the F word, I think the F word is still shocking, and I don't even think the people who were shocked know that they were shocked by her use of the F word. So,
okay.
If I were her manager, I would have said, controversy is good. You did great. The F word, it's bad for your career. Subliminally, it'll register with the wrong people. It's not good to say the F word. That's my only criticism.
Right. Well, I thought that it was definitely fearless. I thought
that's the F word. I hate that.
I thought that she. I thought she had a lot of good jokes. My. I'll get to the Sarah Sanders joke in a second. I think that, you know, I think, and maybe I'm like a million years old, and I am a million years old, there seems to be a feeling now that when you get a gig as a comic, that, hey, you've hired me, you're going to get me, and that there's no... I think that there is an obligation to the people. It is a performance, and I think that there's an obligation to the people that you're performing for. So I think that you know, I don't think that she, what made me uncomfortable was not the material or whatever. It was that, you know, you got to kind of take a step toward the people who have hired you. So I thought that there was a little bit of a disconnect there. And, you know, with this administration and with the people, I mean, there's, you take somebody like Kellyanne Conway, there's a million things that you can make light about her. So a couple of the choices, you know, I didn't think were the best choices. Now, in terms of the joke that everybody was outraged about, the only problem with the joke was it was upside down. If she had done that joke upside down, which means if she had said Sarah Huckabee Sanders is very resourceful, you know how she gets that perfect smoky eye? She burns facts and then uses the ash.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And that's a better joke. You've avoided any kind of misconstruing about whether you're making fun of her appearance. So that was my only, that I think that joke was just upside down.
May I respond to that?
Yes.
First off, I want to give you a compliment.
Yeah.
You said you're a million years old, right?
Yeah.
But you look 500,000 years old. May I say that?
Yeah, please. Thank you.
Secondly, I think the problem with that joke was the word facts. It sounds like fat.
No, absolutely. Well, that's what I thought when I first heard it. Yeah, she swallowed that a little. Yeah, that was when I first heard that. Yeah, and I think that if it had been flipped, I think that would have been...
Truth is a better word than facts.
Right, right.
And le mot juste.
Right. No, I think you're right about that. But there were some really... she had some really beautiful lines. And she is, she's a fine writer, and she has the persona on stage. But I get uncomfortable with the notion of, you know, you're lucky to have me. And because it's a very tough gig. There's no question. It's a very tough gig. It's a nice gig.
It's a
good gig to get. And I think that you have to take a step towards them. Not the whole thing, but the notion I read this, that she was told, you know, burn it to the ground, or really, you know, because really that's your goal? I don't think so. I really don't think it is. And
let me ask you, when you go back and watch Seth Meyers and Barack Obama in 2011,
right,
going after Trump,
right,
the reason that resonated so much and was so hurtful was everybody was laughing except for Trump. The two of them were, not to take anything away from Michelle Wolf, but when you attack somebody eloquently and elegantly,
right,
and you don't give that person ammo to use against you, i.e. using correct. The F word, you're eviscerating them.
Right. Right.
By the way, do you know what Barack Obama was doing that night? It was like a...
Yes, I know exactly what he was doing that night.
Tell us.
He was waiting. He was concealing the fact that they had shot and killed Osama bin Laden.
He wasn't sure. He had given the order.
Oh, he wasn't sure. I thought he knew. I thought he hit the stage knowing.
No. He was in the situation, I think, I'm pretty sure, because I remember reading about it and thinking, this is a scene out of The West Wing. Nobody would believe it. This is like something Martin Sheen would do. He left the Situation Room and said, I have to go do the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And his entire presidency was in the balance. Because remember Jimmy Carter tried to rescue the hostages, and that was it for him?
Right. Well, the problem there is that you don't go to Phil's helicopter rental. You know, that's the problem. You go to the people that make helicopters. That was the problem. Yeah.
So, I mean, how cool does that make that evening, knowing that Barack Obama has to go out and do the White House Correspondents' Dinner, in and of itself a high-pressure situation?
Right.
But then to have to kill bin Laden on the same night, and it was a Saturday.
Yeah. Shabbos. It was Shabbos. Which made it even more impressive. Because it was one of the guys in the SEALs that got it, because the Jews...
The Shabbos SEAL.
Yeah, because they can't, you know, you can't turn on an automatic weapon during Shabbos. People don't know this.
What was your first reaction when you heard that they got bin Laden?
My first reaction was, great, so what? That was my first reaction. Great, so what?
Mine was, the Republicans, they're besides themselves right now.
Right, oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. Well, yeah, because, well, it really, yeah, to me, yeah. Yeah. But the fact that it took that long to get, you know, a 6'7" guy driving a dialysis machine, you know, really. I mean, you don't have to be Ellery Queen to get this, yeah. Oh, we just lost our listener. Thank you. But I think that, you know, I think stand-up has really changed in the last few years. And I think that it is...
I wish I was starting now.
I wish you were starting now.
I think now.
You know what? Maybe you should. And that's how you host a show.
Yes, Bill yeah. Schaft. How do people reach you, sir?
With a compliment, usually. I mean, you know, that's really kind of lures me in. Oh, how do they reach me?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, you know, they say something about, you know, I read one of your novels. No, well, I'm available at BillSchaft.com, and I'm available on Twitter at BillSchaft, or, you know, stop by the house, pretty much.
You are an amazing human being. I wish we were best.
Well, who am I to argue with you? But
you know, it's like I knew you all my life. It's like we've never really hung out together, and then you did my show, and I thought,
right.
I've known this guy my entire life, even though this is really the first time I'm talking with you. Hey, Bill Schaft lost a Thurber Prize to Alan Zweibel.
Right, right.
For his book, Time Won't Let Me.
Yeah.
But he's also the author of four novels, The Ringer, Time Won't Let Me, Everything Hurts, and Shrink Thyself.
Yes.
He has written columns for Sports Illustrated. He's lost more than 15 Emmy Awards.
Yeah. Yeah. Would it be, and you, and you won how many?
A lot.
Yeah. 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 Well, a lot. Wow. That's that's like Dwight Hemian, you know, a lot.
I've...
Again, we've lost our listener. But
who's Dwight Hemian?
Well, you were, let's just close out because we didn't take care of Dennis Miller.
Yes.
Can you pinpoint, because you did so well with the, letting us know exactly where Barack Obama was right before the correspondence dinner.
Right.
So maybe you can pinpoint when the shift came with Dennis Miller in terms of his ideology. You know, let's just put it this way. If you're a if you're like a serial killer, they say, and you you know, you shoot people, mm-hmm. they say that all changes once you strangle your first victim. And then you realize, what am I doing shooting people when it's, you know, I'm a much more of a do-it-yourself guy. I'm just going to strangle from now on. So was it a shift?
Well, hang on for a second. Like, are you saying that when you get your hands dirty, it's like gardening? Is that what you're saying? And that there's something thrilling?
Yeah. It was, or strangling, gardening, yeah, too, yeah, okay.
That there's something satisfying about strangling.
Apparently, this is what I've heard with the serial killers. Steve Scrovan, your buddy, used to do a tremendous bit about that people always, whenever there's a serial killer, people always say the same thing about him. Not a serial killer, a mass murderer. People always say the same thing about him. You know, he was a loner. Well, he was in a crowd that day. I mean, I love that. One of the great lines of all time. He was in a crowd that day.
Whenever I meet a serial killer, I say, do I have a woman for you? And then I don't want to get into trouble with my, anyway, but what was your
question? Larry Amoros used to do, I mean, this was a tremendous bit about his father couldn't say anything bad about anybody. And you would say to his father, really? You know, what about Adolf Hitler? Good speaker. You know, he would say that. Well, what about John Wayne Gacy? He killed, you know, 38 people and he buried them under the house. And the father would say, well, he wasn't lazy, and he was a homeowner. So.
What was your question?
Dennis Miller. When do you think it happened?
Well, conventional wisdom, what he says is that everything changed after 9/11. That he went from being a McCarthy, not Joe McCarthy, but Eugene McCarthy liberal, to a rabid neocon, Cheney, Bill Kristol conservative, right?
Right.
And I think that's true. I think one event can absolutely change your DNA. For example, do you remember when we went to prison?
Yeah. How can I forget?
We were...
We had actually, you know, we had more listeners when we went to prison.
You and I were checking into prison. I'll never forget this.
Yes.
And they hadn't even taken our wallet and shoelaces. Right. And the two of us started sucking cock immediately. We weren't even in a cell block.
Right.
And
correct.
Just the act of getting arrested instantaneously turned us into gay men. So I think, you know, your DNA can be changed dramatically by one event. You and I.
Right. Let me just say that it turned you into a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
It turned me into a prisoner. That's different.
Of love.
It's a completely different deal. The act of getting arrested turned me into a prisoner, and so I assumed that role. Turned you into a gay man, which is unfortunate.
I think that if you watch Dennis,
yeah,
it wasn't 9/11 that changed him. That was always there. That that was always there. One event doesn't change one's politics.
I agree.
It was always there. That's a convenient excuse.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah, because, no, I remember him. Yeah, I remember him as being, his outlook being quite progressive. Of course, that word wasn't around then, except, you know, in Temple.
I think because he had long hair and he said the F word a lot.
He used to bash Poppy Bush. He was not a fan, and I thought the outlook on Weekend Update was that, but I, you know, to me, it seemed like, and I respect your take more than my take was, is that I think he saw an opening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a practical decision, because at the end of the day, you know, they're just jokes, you know. So if you have a practical attachment to the art form, they're just jokes. So,
well, but that's the issue. And for this, it's your show, so I don't want
to. No,
but that's the issue. You believe they're just jokes. I believe they're just jokes. I think what struck a nerve with Dennis, with Michelle Wolf, is that she was doing more than just jokes. When you take that vitriolic a stand, what you're doing is you're giving yourself a safety net as a comic. Dennis uses this as a safety net. And to some degree, Michelle used the safety net.
Correct.
You go, well, they didn't like my politics. And that's easier than just writing great jokes. That's something Dennis is capable of writing great jokes. The lazy man in him is the safety net of, oh, they were Democrats, or they were liberals. Well,
right.
If you write a great joke, it doesn't matter
right.
what the audience
or
is.
That thing that, I mean, I don't think that, it, and to give him credit, I don't think Dennis ever did this. You know, when you get, when all of a sudden your material is not considered humorous, it's considered a statement, mm-hmm. and you hide behind the, well, I'm a satirist, you know, that people that we've known have done. That notion of, well, wait a minute, that's not funny at all. That's racist. That's ignorant. That's intolerant. And it's, well, no, I'm a satirist. It's not. I'm satirizing the people that feel
right.
That, you know, that's always a cute move.
Well, I just saw a poster for the New York City Department of Human Rights. And
right.
the poster reads, it was just a joke. And then they cross out just a joke.
Right.
And write in sexual harassment. That's the poster. I thought that was brilliant. Because that's what Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter, they always, and Laura Ingraham, they'll always say, I was just joking. No, that was bigoted. That was, don't, I'm a comedian. I'm a comedy. I know what a joke is.
Right.
And I know what a bigoted comment is because I'm also a racist.
Right. Which is, and how convenient.
I'm a hyphenate.
Now, I wrote on the Writers Guild Awards, and not the year that we saw each other back in the kitchen at the Edison Ballroom. But
you're
the
talking
year
about
after
Robert
that.
Kennedy's assassination?
That's correct. And how about that Rafer Johnson couldn't catch the guy? Olympic gold medalist. You're at the Ambassador Hotel. You can't catch the busboy. You know, I don't, that's all. It's, you know, and I have great respect for Rafer Johnson, but you're an Olympic track star. You can't catch the guy.
What about Rosie Grier?
Rosie Grier sat on him, right?
And wrestled.
Or played the guitar.
No, you're thinking of Rosie O'Donnell. Rosie Grier was at the Kennedy assassination, the Robert
right.
Kennedy. Yeah.
And Rafer Johnson. They were backstage with him. And there's an audio where a guy's screaming, "Go get him, Rafer! Go run! Go echo!" You know.
And what was Rosie Greer's hobby that suggested he was a little like Rusty Staub?
Was he a needle? He was a needle point.
Very good.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was a needle point.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Now, wait a second. We're back. We were talking about...
I have my Robert Kennedy assassination joke, if you want it.
Go ahead.
What was Sirhan's middle name?
I don't know. What was...
Boutrous. Boutrous.
Wow. That is... Really?
Horrible.
That's just, imagine if you'd taken another 5 minutes.
I know, Bill Schaft, that there's one person listening who got that.
Yeah.
Or there's one person listening. Go ahead. We do, it's your show, but we should wrap
it. One time, you remember the great Ronnie Shakes?
Yes.
And he... one time, I think he was on stage and he was trying to work out, and he just did a, he did one of those things where the premise was the joke. And he said, how come there are no female mass murderers? And, you know, he said it with his, the way he taught it, so that got a laugh. And he got off stage, and I went up to him and I said, what about Carol Chessman? And again... That's just you and me,
yep.
And
yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And on we go. Well, this has been...
Was he the flashlight murderer, Carol Chessman?
No. I don't think he was the flashlight murderer. Although that would have been a nice credit. Before I bring you up, what do you want me to say about you? Well, I'm the flashlight murderer.
I was the
flashlight. You don't want me to say clubs and colleges all over the country. No, just the flashlight murderers.
I was the fleshlight murderer.
Oh, that's lovely. See, you took a little time there. That was good. You didn't just stuff a Boutros in.
Yeah. Okay. I
think we're done.
We're done. I love you. You're my best friend, even though you don't know it. Can you stay on the line for 1 second?
Oh, I know it.
How do people follow you on Twitter? Very quickly.
At Bill Schaft.
Okay, hang on for one. Thank you for doing this. Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. All right.
Stay on the line
God
for
bless
one
you.
Second. Stay on the line for 1 second.